You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We continue on a Friday, kind of a special edition of All Marine Radio. We'll talk cooking probably next hour as the All Marine Radio head chef will join us. But in light of what happened in Syria last night, I wanted to bring on some my battle buddies and make you smart about them. And one of those guys is Kurt Knowles. He's a F-18 guy. We served together in Afghanistan, and then he went back for another ground tour as an air planner. What was your official title, man?
I was actually future ops for the infantry regiment / special purpose MAGTAF out there. So, I mean, thinking large, big picture, planning, you know,
that's like
exercise and events and stuff like that for. You know, you're thinking, a future ops guy, if you think a future operations officer, you're thinking 3 to 6, maybe even 12 months out from what's going on. So as it gets kind of in close, you're kind of what we call a hand the baton off or hand the football off. That's about 4 weeks out. So then you kind of start blending with what we call current ops. And then all that planning and everything from logistics to admin to how are we going to operate this thing all kind of starts to get handed off. And it was a great, great tour, a great way to finish it out. And with Colonel McCullough as my boss, and you guys all know him, he's just amazing. And he just really let me run with it, you know. And what was kind of crazy though is there's a big exercise in Jordan that I helped plan called Eager Lion. And You do all the planning for it, and then you leave, and you're like, I wonder how it went. You know, so I reach back, and you reach back and ask, like, how did it go, and kind of start to get the feedback that way, and it sounded like it went well, but you kind of set up the birthday party, but you don't get to attend.
That sucks. No, that's why I hate future ops, man. Current ops is way better, man. Somebody walks in, and they give you this thing, and then you get to kind of make it your own a little bit, but it's
yeah,
really their baby. They conceived it. They did all the hard work, which is the planning, bringing people together, the deconfliction, and all of that. It's a little bit of smart guy work too. And
you know what is also, I think, key is you have to have a staff / boss that appreciates the dividing line between current ops and future ops. When you start blending the two,
yeah, it doesn't work.
Then it's kind of like having, you know, basically two brothers in the same room talking to mom. It's like, you know, who's mom going to listen to? It's like, hey, the one brother planned it all. Now you need to leave, and the other brothers were going to run it all, you know? And so you have to, I remember that feeling of, hey, where's Rudy? What's going on here? How are we doing this? It's like, look, fellas, I'm already thinking about two other exercises down the road. Like, you have it now. And you know what I appreciated it was when you've worked in current ops, much like you and I did in Afghanistan, where you're handling the exact that moment, that second, that day, you have to have worked in that environment to understand, hey, future ops, that's their lane, was they're thinking it way down the road, but you don't want to see that future ops guy walk into the room. You don't, as a current ops guy, you don't want to see him because then he starts blending future with current, and you have to have a dividing line. You have to hand the football off. It's like having a quarterback and a running back running together. It's like, it doesn't work.
Yeah,
you know,
doesn't
one
work.
Guy's got to have the ball, you know? So, yeah.
It's interesting, and the way this works, really, I mean, the way we did it in Afghanistan is there's what's called a crosswalk and a crosswalk brief, and that is literally where the operation is crosses from future ops to current ops. This now belongs to you. The FOPs guys come in, and they would brief all of our guys in the COC about an upcoming operation, and then we owned it. And so everything was directed to current ops because it's running it now. The FOPS guys, the future ops guys, were still available, you know, if you had questions and you needed footnotes and, hey, I don't understand this, can you explain this? So you kind of go down rabbit holes and drill into maybe the subtleties of it. But it's a very formal, it should be almost a ceremonial passing of this operation from these guys to these guys because for a couple reasons. One, current ops has to own it. Somebody's got to say, somebody's got to be in charge of it. Two, the FOPS guys have to go on to the next thing because there is a next thing. And so they've got to be freed up to do that. So, all right. So talk about, I wanted to have you on this morning to talk about, just weaponeering a strike. Like, so somebody says, okay, in response to that nerve attack, did you have a chance to see any of that video?
I looked at pictures and read some reports from the New York Times and putting out some pretty, you know, it's funny as you talk to, it's Colonel Constantine, right? It's on quite a bit.
Right.
I listen pretty regularly, and I appreciate what his feedback of, like, that one day you said, where are you going for your sources? And I think he, too, says he reads the New York Times. So am I correct on that, Matt?
Right.
Did you say New York? Yeah, yeah. So I've been leaning towards them. I was reading some reports from the strike from the New York Times. And to be honest with you, I was actually pleased with the unbiased tone of it. It felt very much like reporting. It was like, here's what's going on, and here's what Trump said, and it wasn't going down the, and this is why he said that.
Right.
It's just, hey, here's what he said, and here's what happened. And
now, if I could offer you opinion, and if you see a guy named Michael Gordon's name on anything, I thought the best reporting out of Iraq when I was there, and when Afghanistan when I was there, because you're in a position to know, you know. And then you're reading somebody's work who's writing about it. The New York Times did very, very high quality work relative to reporting on the wars. When I was in a position to fact check, if you will, I thought they did high quality stuff. So.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. So I've been reading New York Times stuff, and I looked at the images they posted. So talking about, you want to know weaponeering from a Tomahawk missile perspective, two destroyers out of the Mediterranean.
Well, just let me paint a picture for you. The nerve agent gets used on those civilians, and the president says, we need to respond to this. He's crossed that red line. I'm now the president, and I'm not going to have that. Okay, so we're going to present him with options. The Russians have now upgraded the Syrian air defenses. Okay, I want to address that. And then we have Tomahawks. So we have different options. We can do manned aviation strike packages. We can do Tomahawk missiles from the coast. Talk to me about, as a planner, those kind of considerations. And again, we're not in on anything. We're retired guys.
Yeah.
All we're doing is talking about open source information.
So when I'm looking at what they used, have you talked about on the show at all that it was basically banned sarin gas? I mean, have you addressed this all? Like how bad that stuff is? I mean, it's a nerve agent where essentially it asphyxiates you. So imagine. You don't smell it, you don't see it, and all of a sudden you can't breathe. I mean, that's what it is. Like, it's a nasty band, weapons of mass destruction. And that's when, I know it's a sensitive subject, but that's what you look at when we went after Iraq. A lot of it was his nerve agents and gas weapons that he had and that we believed in storage. Well, this is the perfect example of how bad this stuff is. And it is characterized and categorized as a weapons of mass destruction, but it's odorless. You can't see it, and it asphyxiates you. So imagine this. All of a sudden, you're walking along, and now you feel like you're drowning. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you can't breathe. It strangles all your nerves and your lungs. So that's what happened to these people. Well, then the finger pointing starts going on from a planning perspective of who did it, right? So what the president of Syria is saying is, look, we launched a strike into this known area of what we would characterize as insurgents, and when we hit this building, it disposed the nerve agent,
right,
what was ever stored in the building. That's Syria's government stance. Well, then, so the people and the civilians in the, you know, I don't know if we're listening to insurgents, but they're saying, no, that came from the weapons that were launched, that agent came, that's where that came from. So it was a bunch of finger pointing going on. Well, then you, from an ops perspective and planning perspective, you look at what's their history. Well, in 2013, they again, had used nerve agent, and they say they, that the accusations by President Obama was that the Syrian government, and this president, Assad, I believe is his last name, used nerve agents on civilians, right? So in 2013, President Obama was threatening military intervention in Syria, but he didn't follow through with it,
right?
He decided, like, let's just, just kind of monitor and see what's going to happen.
Right, his famous red line, you know, piece said that, that's a red line, and yet when he violated it, there was no response.
Yeah, so exactly. So then President Trump, and this is why, and I would say, you know, Senator McCain's pretty left, and Senator McCain's applauding Trump for this on record because he's like, we're not going to tolerate you using banned weapons of mass destruction or even have it in your country. You can't control your country, or, and you can't even tell us for sure that you didn't use this. Or he's saying he didn't use this, but all evidence points to the contrary. So President Trump says, I'm not taking this. So he launched. So then they figure out the strike package of what they're going to put onto this airfield, right? So the nice thing about, you look at, if you weaponeer it, is that the cruise missiles, obviously very low risk, high benefit for stationary type of target, right?
Okay.
So these are non-moving.
Okay, explain the low risk and explain the benefits, you know, of striking a stationary facility like an airfield. So explain the low risk.
Russia has helped out Syria directly and indirectly, and they've stated that they are putting in more air, basically surface-to-air defense, right? So now if you don't have manned aircraft overhead, then you don't have to worry about getting shot down, right? And then so the missiles are much, much harder to see on radar. So that takes out a big risk right there for our aircraft, our pilots, and then the fact that it's harder to detect the missiles. The other thing, if you look at what kind of targets they are, when you're using GPS-guided weapons like a Tomahawk cruise missile, those work very well as stationary targets, like buildings and bunkers and things that aren't moving, where it's, you really need to have either a drone overhead, like a UAV, or an aircraft is moving targets, like vehicles or people, those type of stuff, because now you're talking laser-guided or munitions that need to be basically led in front of the moving target, like we do when we strafe with our aircraft, with our bullets.
All right, so in terms of the Tomahawk, against a what the Tomahawk does, then it maximizes or it minimizes the exposure of humans and to being shot down, paraded in front, killed, or, you know, that whole nightmare that would possibly take place if you put pilots into that airspace where, again, the Russians have upgraded the air defense. Does it work? Because a lot of times the Russian stuff doesn't work. But if you're going to go do that, you got to take on that piece of it. So the Tomahawk missile keeps you from doing that. It also, because it's not something that's moving. For instance, if we're trying to hit an ID cell and they put the ID and now they're moving, that's not easy. But when it's fixed, when it's an airfield and when it's aircraft that are parked on the airfield, when it's fuel dumps, that stuff is about as easy targeting as you can have. The only thing that's easier is buildings. So it really sets up nicely for the minimization in terms of pilots and the maximization in terms of technology and GPS precision-guided munitions.
Yes, and also, you look at where Syria lies, I mean, look at the map, right? So it's up on the kind of the western, northwestern side of Iraq, right? So you've got Russia nearby, you've got Turkey nearby. Well, that's a lot of congested airspace, as I'd like. I mean, we just had, remember that Russian aircraft got shot down by Turkey. I mean, there's a lot of tension and a lot of traffic up there right now. We're flying stuff over Iraq. I mean, there's just, this is, if you're looking at kind of the hornet's nest, so to speak. You know, I'm trying to keep it simple for the listeners. If you're looking for the hornet's nest, that's it. Like this kind of triangle of mess right now up there, the northern, northwest side of Iraq, Syria, Turkey, you know, southern part of Russia. I mean, that's a mess up there. And so let's keep our manned stuff out of there, even our UAVs out of there. We'll just get as far north as we can with our ships and then launch the Tomahawks. All they're doing is checking the range. Yeah, we got the range. All right, we're good. Let's do this. You know, that's like shagging a ground ball. You know what I mean? It's like this just should be a no-brainer. You know?
Okay. So really, in terms of weaponeering this thing, pretty easy decision when it comes to minimum exposure, maximum effect. The Tomahawk is pretty much an easy decision.
Well, also, Mac, I think let's say it didn't have all the effects we wanted. Like, what does it send for a message? Like, what are you sending from a? I mean, there's times where all we do is drop leaflets. You know what I mean? We're not actually destroying anything, but we're sending a message like, you keep doing this, and we're going to start bringing it. So what did this do mentally to Syria? You know what I mean? Like, wait a minute. Maybe we should second guess on, you know, employing weapons into this area or at all, and because the U.S. isn't going to tolerate it. So, yeah. I mean, you look at it, I just think from a mental component, too. So, yeah.
All right. Any other thoughts on a plan as a planner on this kind of strike?
Well, I guarantee you that right now they're working a plan for what's next. You know what I mean? What is next? And you've got to go into everybody right now. The way we always plan a military is you have what's called a red cell. And right now, there's a red cell that's basically acting as Syria, and they're trying to figure out what's their next move and how are we gonna basically address it. You know, I mean, I wouldn't say attack; it's not the right word, but how are we gonna address it? What are we gonna do if they do this? Okay, they don't do that; they do this. How are we gonna handle that? So, in aviation, we call it chair flying. We, you know, practice basically without flying in ops. You know, we have basically red cell and on our good side, and we try to basically figure out, we chair fly what's going on and how are they going to act and what they're going to do. And yeah, there's a lot of people right now deciding what's the next move if they do this. So if they don't do anything, then maybe you sit there idly and watch, you know, or if they decide to keep attacking with more airstrikes, then you got to make a decision. Do you use more Tomahawks? Do you go on with more weapons? Do you start talking about ground troops? I mean, they're starting to think about that as far as what's the next move if Syria does this.
All right. So today, right now, obviously we have collectors overhead and in the vicinity collecting everything that they can collect, and we collect electronic. We collect everything. We collect voice calls. We collect electronic data, and then we observe. And so all those pieces being put together as Red Cell guys doing their thing, saying this is what's most likely. We believe this is all. These two things are also options. You will know those things by these indicators or these movements. And so that's what we're watching for, and then the response gets crafted. So in the aftermath, on the military side, sit and looking for the Syrian response. And I would say that he has to be very careful, because it'll be interesting if we can assess what else, because his Air Force is plagued by dwindling, you know, number of air platforms that he can use, and to have a whole bunch of them destroyed doesn't help him or his sustainability at all. And if he wants to tempt fate, he can certainly do something respond. But so it'll be curious. I'll be curious to see what he in fact does, if anything, to respond to this, other than put his hands in his pockets and hide behind the Russians. Which I would
think, you read my mind. Like, what's going to be a huge player is what's Russia telling him in his ear, you know, because that's Russia's involvement, I think, is going to bring more assets and more money. So how's Russia going to, they've already gone, President Putin saying this, America's actions are costing us relations, you know. So with that being said, we'll see what Putin's telling Assad right now.
Yeah, well, he's quoted as saying that Putin slams trumped up U.S. attack. So, yeah, so we'll see.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll see. But the bottom line, in terms of the military part of this, there's people in rooms that are watching video feeds and are listening to intercepted message, trying to put together the pieces of what happened on the ground in more detail than we probably know it now. And then looking for indicators for a Syrian response if there's going to be one, and so that's what's going on among operating forces in the region. All right, man. Hey, I first of all thank you for doing this and taking time out of your morning to once again be the explainer in chief, and really appreciate it.
Absolutely, absolutely, man. So anytime you need anything, I'm here for you.
There you have it. Soccer coach, dad. He was at Universal Studios last night. And battle buddy and all-around good guy. Former F-18 pilot, Lieutenant Colonel Kurt Knowles, United States Marine Corps, retired. And thanks, bud. See ya.
All right, we'll see you, man. Talk to you soon. See you.
Okay, there you have it. The weaponeering piece of this, how that worked. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, General John Allen, United States Marine Corps retired, he will join us. We're going to talk a bit about strategy and kind of follow up some of the things that Ben Conable raised. What does this mean? And one of the problems in Syria is that we don't have, in terms of Assad, now there's two problems in Syria. One is ISIL. Right, they're in Raqqa. That's kind of an Iraq issue. Syria proper is a Bashar al-Assad issue. We don't have a great partner in Syria to throw in with, which has been our dilemma. And so we've gone through this regime change, no regime change deal in Syria. So General John Allen's going to join us here right after this break, and we'll continue a Friday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. This hour of All Marine Radio brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. You can check out their entire line of products at battlemug.com. Use the promo code Marine for 15% off. It's a veteran-owned and operated company. The Picatinny rails on the side of the Battle Mug means you can mount anything that you put on your rifle. If you're going to the field on the mug, if you have it in your office, like I do, flags, emblems, all kinds of cool stuff. It's a great, unique gift. Battlemug.com. Check it out. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on a Friday edition right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.